Welcome to another episode of the Draft Wire podcast. I'm your host, Luke Easterling, editor of the Draft Wire at USA Today and the NFL Wire Network. I'm joined by my good friend, my co-host. You read his work over at Bears Wire, also part of the NFL Wire Network, Brian Perez. Brian, we're going to talk some more NFL draft. We got the Senior Bowl coming up. We already have some news with the quarterback group that we're already going to have some big names, and now one of them's not going to be there. But Shrine Game practice is in full swing. That means the Senior Bowl is around the corner. I don't know. How you feeling tonight, man?
I'm good, man. I'm getting excited. You know, unfortunately, I won't be down in Mobile, Alabama for the first time in several years this year, so I'm going to go through a little bit of withdrawal next week. I know, Luke, you're not going to be able to make it down there either, but you'll have some eyes on the ground to give us some first-person reporting from down there. But it's going to be a little uncomfortable as we see Draft Twitter putting their live and instant analysis up on their Twitter feed from Mobile. Going to be missing it a little bit, but still looking forward to it. You know, they got the wall-to-wall coverage of the week on NFL Network and I think ESPN now. So we'll still get our fill, but it just won't be the same, man. It won't be the same as Mobile.
You know, we could tell the greatest hits of our Mobile experiences down in Senior Bowl over the last couple of years, and I really don't think anyone would believe them. We've definitely
I think everyone listening to this podcast is probably, if they haven't watched both seasons, or probably at least one season through the hit show Stranger Things on Netflix. And all I could say, the best way to describe the last couple of years that Luke and I have had down in Mobile, Alabama, has literally been that we ventured into the upside down. What going to Senior Bowl from some crazy cab drivers to you name it, and it's probably not appropriate to even get into in this show, but it's pretty
it's
just a week in and of its own making down there.
Yeah, crazy times, man, and like you said, we will have things covered from down in Mobile, a lot of action, and we'll be on top of it all. We've got some news already regarding the quarterback group. We were looking forward to almost half of those quarterbacks down there were going to be potential first-round picks, and Baker Mayfield from Oklahoma, Josh Allen from Wyoming, but Mason Rudolph from Oklahoma State was also going to be there. Looks like a foot injury is going to keep him out of this year's game. He's still going to be in Mobile, going to take part in the interview process and the measurements, much like Chad Kelly from Ole Miss did last year, even though he was out with an injury. And you know, that brings up kind of an interesting point. The whole Senior Bowl process, it's looked at as this kind of mile marker in the pre-draft process, as this opportunity for guys to really separate themselves both in positive and negative ways. Mason Rudolph, you know, he's a guy that, is he a fringe first-round pick? You know, could he have used the Senior Bowl week to kind of cement himself in the late first-round category and maybe gain some ground on those other quarterbacks in this class? You know, I'll throw it to you, Brian. How much do you think a quarterback in particular can really improve their stock? You and I were there a couple years ago when Carson Wentz was there. You know, Dak Prescott was there, didn't really have a great week. He ended up going in the fourth round. Carson Wentz goes number two overall. How much do you really think a strong week at the Senior Bowl can impact a guy's draft slot, and what are maybe some of the variables there that can contribute to that?
You know, I think the Senior Bowl really pays the most dividends for guys coming from smaller programs. That's why for a guy like Carson Wentz, it was a real showcase for him, because it was the highest level of competition that he had faced up to that point in his college career, and he really didn't miss a beat. And it wasn't necessarily that Carson Wentz looked like some elite thrower of the football, but just his demeanor, the way he carried himself on the field, he looked every bit the part of the Carson Wentz we're seeing now in the NFL as a, you know, before his injury, as an MVP candidate and a leader of a Super Bowl contender. So those intangible traits were evident with him on the field when he was down there, which was surprising considering he was kind of the small school guy. Now swimming with the sharks, for lack of a better term. So it really helps guys like that. And we go back, I don't know if it was that year or the year before. The name is slipping me. Luke, you're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan. The small school offensive lineman from Hobart that they drafted in the second round. Ali Marpet, another small school guy who was able to show on the Senior Bowl field during the week of practices that level of competition for him didn't matter either. He had a dominant week that weekend. He is the perfect case study for how much the Senior Bowl can actually help your draft stock, because if he wasn't down there and competing against some of the best Division I talent in the country, he probably would not have been a day two pick. He probably would have been middle of day three. So he really cemented his draft stock and really had it skyrocket after that week of practices. So for a guy like Mason Rudolph, I think the way he would have benefited most by just throwing down there would be he would be lining up in a more traditional offense, probably taking snaps under center, doing more of the things that evaluators want to see him do in live action before spending a high draft pick on him, because I do think Mason Rudolph has first round ability, but you know, he has questions about the style of offense he's coming out of, or the system of offense he's coming out of, and whether or not he'll transition well to the NFL field. So NFL scouts and coaching staffs that can get their hands on him and kind of get a sneak peek at what he would look like on Sundays helps a guy like him. But you know, another thing to talk about really quick, circling back to his injury, Mason Rudolph is the first player to back out of the Senior Bowl. He will not be the last. We go through this every year that, you know, 72 hours before the Senior Bowl kicks off, some of the bigger names end up backing out. They have agents, they have representation in place who will evaluate the injury risk, who will take a look at their draft stock, determine whether or not they should play. A couple years ago, I think it was Bud Dupree backed out, Kevin White backed out, a bunch of the big name top 10, top 20 picks that right now make the game really appealing do withdraw last minute. And Phil Savage, before the weigh-ins, always goes through his classic list of guys that backed out, the reasons why, and even gives a little kind of a wink-wink to scouts in attendance about, you know, you got to look a little deeper into this guy because maybe they backed out in less than a professional manner.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a unique situation with Rudolph, you know, playing in a Power 5 conference, putting up big numbers, you know, throughout his career. I do wonder if it really makes that big of a difference. We've already seen a lot of responses on social media from people about how this is such a missed opportunity for Mason Rudolph. I'm really not convinced that it is, to be honest. I don't know what more he could really do that we didn't see on tape against some big teams that he's already kind of put his resume together. I really don't think he's going to lose a whole lot. Maybe he could have made up more ground this way, but I mean, being there and still being able to take part in the interviews and get in a room with the team decision makers and let them know a little bit about who he is as a person and you know, the football mentality side of things, I really don't feel like it's going to be that much of a missed opportunity for him, as opposed to, say, if we were having the same conversation about Josh Allen from Wyoming. I think it'd be a much different, you know, situation, don't you think?
I do. I think Josh Allen is coming into the draft process, you know, with a lot more questions, even more so than a Mason Rudolph or probably any other player who's being considered as a first-round prospect. You know, Josh Allen has a chance, if he really looks the part down in Mobile, he has a chance to really start that momentum toward being a top-five pick, or dare I say even higher in the first round, because if he wows scouts down there, if he wows the GMs in attendance, if he makes one of those two coaching staffs that's going to be responsible for coaching the game just fall in love with him, especially the Denver Broncos, you know, he could be a guy that if he has a really strong week, now he goes from, you know, a tape, a body of work, a body of tape that has some serious warts on it. He'll start giving those GMs and those scouts a foundation to explain them away. Well, you saw what he did down in Mobile with some pro coaching, maybe some better receivers in an environment that he felt comfortable in. If he rises to the occasion and just shows that natural God-given physical ability that he has and really just stands head and shoulders above the rest of the quarterbacks that are down there, you're going to see that top 10, top 5, maybe even the chatter with the Cleveland Browns at the number one pick really start to build up. And I think it's important, again, to circle back to, for all of you out there who are going to be paying close attention to the Senior Bowl next week, it really comes down to the small school guys. And when you look at the guys who made the biggest jump post-Senior Bowl week in recent years, Carson Wentz, Ali Marpet, we talked about already, look at a guy like Cooper Kupp as well. He ended up being a second-round, he ended up as a second-round pick of the Los Angeles Rams. And when he came into the process, he was an exciting small school receiver that, you know, his draft value wasn't exactly known. It was hard to really identify what round is he going to go in. Is he going to be a third round pick? Is he going to be a sixth round pick? Nobody really knew. For those of us that were down there in Mobile last year and saw how elite of a route runner he was, just shaking some of the top cornerbacks in the at that game, you knew right away this guy's an early day two pick, and it ended up being that way. But the Senior Bowl really helped him. Mason Rudolph, he's got 4 years of tape. I mean, you're not going to ignore 4 years of tape because of five practices. It's just not going to happen. So you got to take the draft Twitter scouts that are in attendance down there putting the GIFs together and tweeting pretty much live play-by-play updates. Take it with a grain of salt, because the Senior Bowl will soon be in the rearview mirror, and the calendar will flip to March, and the calendar will flip to April, and the Senior Bowl momentum will slowly dissipate. You know, the scouting combine is going to be the next big event on the calendar. Mason Rudolph will probably throw there, and then the scouting combine suddenly becomes the new momentum builder for some guys that maybe had a bad Senior Bowl week. So this is just the first big event in the draft process, which is why it gets so much attention and so much excitement and maybe a little bit overvalued. But I go back to saying, for the small school guys, this is where they can really make a name for themselves.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, what a difference it makes for those small school guys. And by my count on the current roster, as far as who's accepted invites for the Senior Bowl, I'm looking at 17 players that are from outside the FBS that are going to be there. The two guys that I'm really excited to see that stand out to me, Desmond Harrison, offensive tackle from West Georgia, just a massive, powerful, really, really athletic guy at 6'6", 313, that's going to be there. Really excited to see him going up against some talented pass rushers. And then Dallas Goddard, the tight end from South Dakota State, who I think is a little bit more well-known with the people who follow the draft pretty closely. I think he could end up coming off the board in that same Adam Shaheen range, that second round range, even for a guy coming from the FCS level. So before we move on, we're going to, you know, break down the latest mock draft that we've released over at DraftWire. But before we do, we talk about what does the Senior Bowl do, where is its importance, and in kind of the scope of the entire pre-draft process. And we talked a little bit about, on our last episode, Brian, you talked a lot about Baker Mayfield and the mental side, you know, the off-field and the personality side to his game and his evaluation. He's going to be there down in Mobile. He'll be, you know, the biggest name, the Heisman Trophy winner there. Do you feel like this is going to be a positive situation for him? I know he has the opportunity to do that, but at the end of the day, at the end of that week, after all the interviews and all the, you know, the attention that he's going to garner in that week with everybody descending on that event, do you feel like at the end of the week he's going to have improved his draft stock with the way he's been received by teams kind of behind closed doors?
Well, when it comes to Mayfield, he's one of those players where, you know, I'll believe it when I see it that he'll be at the Senior Bowl. And I'm not saying I have any information as to him hesitating actually showing up at the game, or that he's actually not going to. It's just a gut feeling. I'll believe it when I see it that he actually shows up and participates. I think Phil Savage was really smart earlier in the week, or maybe it was late last week, when he said that he revealed that the Denver Broncos have specifically requested that Baker Mayfield be on their roster. I think he maybe learned a little bit from last year. I believe Deshaun Watson, you know, he was supposed to be at the game. He ended up backing out. Later came out that the Cleveland Browns really wanted him on their roster. By putting that information out early and having Baker Mayfield think, hey, I could work out basically for 3 or 4 days with a team that's picking high in the first round who needs a quarterback, and, you know, I could build that relationship with that club right off the bat and maybe cement myself as their first round, you know, the guy that they want in the first round. So I don't think that was accidental that Phil Savage leaked that information. In my opinion, it was his effort, or it was an effort on his part to just make sure that Mayfield actually shows up. Because if he does show up, that's a big draw. It's not that he's a more talented prospect than a Carson Wentz was a couple years ago, because Carson Wentz was a big deal too down at the Senior Bowl. But Mayfield is a Heisman Trophy winner. He is a pseudo celebrity at this point after his collegiate career. So he would be a huge name to be down at the game. And I think the Senior Bowl committee wants him down there by any you know, by any means necessary, including maybe kind of rigging the roster and making sure he's with the Broncos because they're the quarterback needy team with a high pick, making it very enticing for him to be there. Assuming he does play, I don't think we're going to see any different scenario at Mayfield as maybe we saw with Carson Wentz. You know, Carson Wentz was considered, along with Jared Goff in his draft class, as one of the two top quarterbacks in the class. There wasn't really much of a debate about that. Mayfield's in that cluster of the three, four, five guys that everyone's talking about going in the first round. You know, Rosen and Darnold have dominated the conversation at the top of the draft, and Mayfield's not too far behind. So I think what he could do in Mobile is just solidify his stock, not necessarily by flashing arm talent or athleticism, because that's on tape. There's plenty of tape. There's plenty of tape for scouts to make their grade on based on what he's done on the field. That's where they're going to evaluate his arm talent and what he brings to the position from a traits-based standpoint. But he has an opportunity to show his leadership skills on the practice field in front of general managers and decision makers that haven't been privy to that up to this point. So the spotlight will be on him, and the spotlight will be on every single step he takes. And if he comes across as a mature leader, that will help him. If he comes across a little differently, if he comes across a little arrogant, maybe a little immature, that could hurt him. But look, he's got – actually, I don't know if Mayfield has an agent right now. I think he was one of the guys that was debating whether he even needed to hire one.
I think I saw something earlier today, actually, that he had signed one, but I'd have to go look and check.
Okay, so – if he just signed with an agent, and let's say that just happened today, then you're going to see whether or not he actually plays in the game, because that's going to be a discussion he has with his agent that ultimately steers him one way or another. Up to this point, and maybe the reason why Mayfield is still in the game is because from what I understood, he had only signed with a marketing firm and was debating the value of an agent in his first contract. If he has since changed his position and now does have an agent, that conversation is being had right now with that agent as to whether or not he has more to gain or more to lose by going down to the Senior Bowl. With Mayfield, I think it's kind of a 50-50 proposition. I think he can gain just as much as he could lose by going down there. And honestly, if I was in Mayfield's position and there was just as much to lose as there was to gain, I'm not sure I would go to the game. I think I would say to the scouts and general managers, you know who I am. You see my game tape. I'll see you all at the combine. You'll have your 15 minutes with me. I'll throw at the combine. There's no reason for me to go down to Mobile. But again, competitors generally show up, especially competitors that might have some questions. You know, Mayfield isn't the perfect prospect. He's on the shorter side of the quarterback spectrum, the much shorter side of the quarterback spectrum. So by going down to Mobile, he can answer some of those questions. And you know, I don't know. I don't know how to really give a concrete answer to that, Luke. I think, again, and I don't want to beat a dead horse here, I think that the anomaly with Carson Wentz, or Carson Wentz was an anomaly because he's such a good prospect, but he came from a small school. So it was a no-brainer for him to play. You know, Mayfield's coming out of Oklahoma. I mean, he's played the best of the best his entire collegiate career. He's played against first-round picks his whole career, and he's done really, really well. You know, what more can he show scouts from a quarterbacking standpoint that they don't already know about him? So it'll be interesting to see if he actually does show up.
Switching gears here, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about the latest mock draft that I just put out at DraftWire. I've been going four rounds every Wednesday for a couple of months
now. You're a machine with these, Luke.
You know, to be quite honest, you know, it's something that I enjoy, you know. Looking back to when I grew up, you know, and fell in love with the draft, what are the types of things that kind of got me interested and got me to read things? And I like mock drafts that go beyond the first round. I think it's, you know, especially if your team doesn't have a first round pick, you know, you got to go at least two rounds. If you're a Texans fan, you got to go three rounds just to get involved. So it's just one of those things that I like giving fans maybe a little more than they're getting in a lot of other places, and honestly, for me, it kind of gives me an opportunity, you know, forces me to really dig deeper into this class earlier on, and I've really enjoyed, putting the longer mock drafts out and getting four times as much hate mail from everybody who reads it. So it's really enjoyable.
And let's be honest, Luke, this is what draft season's all about. I know the trend has shifted to a lot more depth with scouting reports, and we see a lot of this contextualized analysis and everything that's coming out these days, which is, some of this work is absolutely brilliant. And, for those guys that do that really well, my hat's off to them. But the essence of draft season, the essence of, what kind of is that feeling of hope for every franchise, especially the teams that pick near the top of the draft in what seems like a yearly tradition, the mock drafts are what makes it fun, because for the casual fan, reading a mock draft gives you an idea of who the top 35, 50, maybe top 75 guys are in an easy to read format without necessarily having a prerequisite, where you need to have a very high understanding of scouting and or, the depth of a certain draft class. Mock drafts just make it really fun and easy to digest. And that's why I love what you're doing, man. Four rounds. Every time you do a mock draft, it's four rounds. I give you credit, man. That is a serious endeavor, and I know how time-consuming it is. So you guys out there, make sure you're clicking on these mocks, because Luke puts a lot of time into this.
I just look back to when I was a kid and reading SI and reading Dr. Z's, Champ Bailey is going here, and these, it's just, I have these little snapshots in my memory of growing up and kind of falling in love with the process because of reading those mock drafts, and it's an opportunity for fans to say, what would this player look like on my team? How much better would my team be, and what kind of part could that guy play for my team? I think it's always fun. Everybody will talk about, that's never going to happen or whatever. It's January. Of course, we're not aiming to nail all 32 or all 128 picks with this thing. We're trying to say, what would it look like if your team used their picks on these players? How could they improve? What would you do differently? And it's all about generating fun conversation, which honestly, at the heart of this whole process, what else are we trying to do if not do that? Even if you're, more on the analytical side of things, that's all we're trying to do is kind of come to the table, bring our thoughts, bring our opinions, and have a good debate about it. So I think that's best done when it's kept lighthearted, it's kept fun and enjoyable, and I think mock drafts do that better than anything.
And if you think about it, it's really the mock draft season that creates the drama on draft day. Because if there wasn't, especially when the big media guys start getting into mock drafts, big media meaning maybe Mel Kiper, Mike Mayock, McShay, all these guys, when they start doing their mock drafts, what it does is create, in a way, an expectation for how the first round should go. So if a guy like Mel Kiper has player X going, in the top 10, and then suddenly that player is still available at pick 15, 16, 17. Well, inside of NFL circles, obviously that player wasn't valued as a top 10 prospect. But when the big media is pumping out their mock drafts and creating this narrative, creating this expectation of how the draft should go, it naturally builds drama. Because once the NFL turns left, when all the mock drafts had them turning right, that's the oohs and ahs and, oh, what's going to happen now? And if it wasn't for mock drafts, as silly as they might be at this point, as much of a guessing game as they might be, even up to the eve, draft day eve, we're all just guessing when we're doing these things. It does create drama. It's like the preview. It's what's, you never know. It's like a boxing fight, right? When you have Mike Tyson up against Buster Douglas, the narrative of that fight was Mike Tyson's going to knock him out. When Buster Douglas knocks him out, it's this massive upset. The same kind of thing happens in the mock drafts, in the mock draft world, where if Baker Mayfield in every mock draft is going to the Denver Broncos at number 5 overall, a consensus opinion amongst all the quote-unquote experts, and then suddenly you're sitting there at pick 25 and Baker Mayfield's still on the board, that drama was created through the mock drafts. And that's what makes it fun, man. I remember being in law school, boring criminal law class or whatever classes I was taking, I'd be still scratching out mock drafts even at that point in my life. Once you start doing mock drafts, you never stop.
Yeah, you really don't, and that's really all it comes back to is that it's supposed to be fun, it's supposed to be enjoyed, and it's not really supposed to be taken that seriously, especially this early in the process. It's just another way to enjoy the game that we love, and I think it should always stay that way. You talk about, the drama that comes when the curveballs are thrown and when the picks don't come off the board the way we've expected them to. If you've had a chance to take a look at least the first round of the mock draft that I put out, do you feel like there's a pick? Which pick is it that kind of makes that left turn where you might have expected it to go right? What's the first name that really stands out and makes you kind of raise your eyebrow?
Well, I think really the key to the first round is going to be the Cleveland Browns, simply because they own two of the first five picks, and they can go in a whole bunch of different directions here. Now, let's assume it goes exactly how you're saying here, with Josh Rosen at number one, Sam Darnold at number two. You have the Colts at three going Saquon Barkley. I don't know why I haven't thought of this as a fit up to this point, but that would be an absolute no-brainer. And then at four, the Browns going Minkah Fitzpatrick. Now, I don't know why I feel like that's a curveball, because Fitzpatrick, pound for pound, is one of the best players in the draft. But I wonder, Luke, that if they get their quarterback at number one, I wonder if at number four, we're going to see them leverage that pick instead of going with Fitzpatrick at four, maybe sliding back a couple spots for that team that might want to jump up for that third quarterback. You have Allen going five to the Denver Broncos, which I think is a perfect fit. And I think a lot of teams that want quarterbacks are going to know that if they want that next guy, they have to leapfrog the Denver Broncos. So personally, I don't see the Browns staying at four and taking Minkah Fitzpatrick. And I think Minkah Fitzpatrick could actually slide quite a bit. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes it all the way down to the Bears at eight. If he makes it to eight, I don't think he's getting past there. But I think that's a little bit, that's the first one I say, I'm not sure it's going to go that way. And I'm not even convinced necessarily that the Browns are going to go quarterback number one. But if they do, I think you're dead on the money. Josh Rosen, to me, is the safest franchise caliber quarterback in the draft.
If the Browns don't go quarterback at number one, who's the pick?
Saquon Barkley.
Agreed.
Saquon Barkley's the pick. I mean, Saquon Barkley could be the best player in the draft. And I think you really have to start looking, and I think we talked about this a little bit on the last show. It's not a fluke, Luke, and I don't mean to rhyme. It's not a fluke, Luke, that there are some really successful teams right now that are riding the shoulders of their young bell cow running backs. You don't have to look any further than the Jacksonville Jaguars and Leonard Fournette. I mean, look what Leonard Fournette did in the playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, he was running mean. He was running angry. He was a man in that game. The Jacksonville Jaguars do not win that game without Leonard Fournette. They are not in the AFC Championship without Leonard Fournette. Look at the Dallas Cowboys. The Dallas Cowboys last season had a really successful year riding the shoulders of Ezekiel Elliott. This year, losing Zeke for a good portion of the season, that team just kind of wasn't the same. They had the quarterback, they had that offensive line, they had those wide receivers, but you take that do-it-all bell cow running back out of the offense, it really limits the upside of the point scoring potential for a team. And we know defense wins championships, but that old school ground and pound mentality helps your defense. And that's what we're seeing. The Jaguars are overloaded, overflowing with studs on defense. And when you can give the ball to a guy like Leonard Fournette 22, 23, 24, 25 times a game and keep that defense fresh, you see what happens. And the Browns, I think Saquon Barkley's right in that mold. He's in that mold of a Todd Gurley, of an Ezekiel Elliott, the kind of guy that's going to be on the field for three downs. You can give him the ball 30 touches a game, and he's going to be the pulse, the heartbeat of your offense. And the reason why I think they can go that route is because of what we just said. You're still going to get that quarterback at four. And if they're smart and they play this draft like a chess game, they could bet on the fact that the Colts won't take a quarterback at three. And maybe if the Colts hold on to that pick and maybe the Colts go with the top offensive tackle in the class, even if it's a little bit of a reach there, or if the Colts go with a guy like Quentin Nelson there because they need the help in the offensive line, then the Browns are sitting there winning the day because one of the top two quarterbacks still made it to them at four, and they got Saquon Barkley to pair with him.
It makes a lot of sense, and I think that's what if I'm John Dorsey, the new GM of the Browns, I mean, I've got to be happy with the way my cupboard has been stocked beforehand. They've got just a ton of picks in the early rounds to play around with, and two in the top four really gives them a lot of freedom.
Let me ask you this, Luke. Do you think there's going to be a team, like if you could identify any of the teams maybe in the back, middle portion of the first round, is there a team that you see being that aggressive and maybe making that kind of overwhelming offer to the Colts at three because they have maybe, they want Darnold or Rosen? Let's say the Browns go Barkley at one, and let's say the Giants go Rosen at two. And, you know, the big media narrative right now, while I might disagree with it, if Sam Darnold is considered that franchise guy and he's sitting there at three, and the Colts are obviously not going to go in that direction, do you see a team that would actually be aggressive enough or take that kind of aggressive approach to move up and leapfrog the Browns to get to three and take that quarterback out from under them?
I don't think there's necessarily a team after. I think the two teams to look at would be Denver and the Jets. I think at 5 and 6, that type of move, getting up there a couple of picks to get ahead of Cleveland, would make sense if there's a guy on the board still that they really feel like can be their guy at quarterback. I think that makes sense. I think if we're talking maybe a little bit later in the top 10, if there's still a guy hanging around, I think the Buffalo Bills are the team to watch because you got a team that's got two picks in the top 25, 21 and 22 right now. They also have a pair of second rounders. They've got a lot of ammo to play with as well, thanks to last year's trade where they traded back out of the top 10 with a team that was targeting a quarterback in the Kansas City Chiefs going up for Patrick Mahomes. You've got a team like that that can really solidify their, you know, they made the playoffs, they've got some strong pieces in place, but with a quarterback that could kind of change that entire outlook and really take advantage of the talent that they have. But is a defensive-minded coach like Sean McDermott, is he going to want to spend those resources to move up for a quarterback as opposed to retooling some of the defensive needs they have? It's really going to be interesting to see. You mentioned Chicago.
Go ahead. And also, too, not to cut you off, Luke, but the other thing, too, is what might be working against teams like the Colts or let's say even the Browns at four from being able to trade back for – you know, with a quarterback needy team, is the depth of the quarterback class this year. If there's that four, maybe five guys that are fringe or potential first round picks, and if the Browns, let's say, go Saquon Barkley at number one and the Giants go Josh Rosen at two, you know, teams might say, look, we're just going to wait to see which one of these guys fall to us because there's not that much separating Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Mason Rudolph, Baker Mayfield. You know, it could be one of those scenarios this year where, you know, if the Colts at three want a king's ransom from, let's say, the Jets at six to move up three spots, the Jets could sit there and say, you know what, we're just going to wait to see which of the two or three quarterbacks falls to us because the grade is pretty close on all of them. I don't think we're looking at a draft year where, like, when the Eagles were, you know, aggressive to move up for Carson Wentz or when the Rams moved into the number one spot for Jared Goff. Those were the clear, I mean, head and shoulders, top two guys in that class, at least on draft day. So I think the fact that there is some depth in this year's class, and depth in the sense that, you know, fringe, maybe surefire first round guys that are grading out pretty close could really hurt those aggressive trade opportunities for a team like the Colts or the Browns.
You know, you mentioned Chicago earlier, and Chicago's an interesting spot in the way my mock draft fell because obviously they're a team that needs a playmaker, a wide receiver to give Mitch Trubisky, you know, a true number one target. I've got Calvin Ridley at Alabama going to them at eight, and he's the only receiver I have in the entire first round. So my question to you, Brian, especially being a Bears guy, do you think enough of Ridley, A, to take him at eight in general, and in a receiver class that seems deep enough to, in the second round range where the Bears will be picking again, you've still got guys not necessarily on the board, but in the range. You've got Cortland Sutton from SMU, Auden Tate from Florida State, I mean, Christian Kirk, Deion Kane, James Washington from Oklahoma State, those types of guys still on the board in the early second round. Do you still like Calvin Ridley enough to take him at eight?
Well, while we're talking about the Chicago Bears, I'm going to throw a shameless plug in here. Make sure if you're a Bears fan, you check out BearsWire.com and follow me on Twitter at BrianPerezNFL. That's Brian with a Y because my work is all centered around the Chicago Bears. But I think Calvin Ridley is going to be a draft process riser. And what I mean by that is, you know, Ridley has all the talent in the world to be, and he has top 10 talent, but his college career wasn't Julio Jones-ish. And you know, look, I'm not comparing him to Julio Jones. Julio Jones is a physical freak. They're not the same kind of prospect. But Calvin Ridley is a player who I think is a top 10 quality wide receiver. Whether he's a top 10 player in this draft, that's a class by class analysis. I mean, a player could have a grade of a top 10 quality pick, but not end up being a top 10 pick because the other positions are stronger in a particular year. But I think Calvin Ridley as a route runner, as an explosive threat downfield, as a playmaker with the ball in his hands, a reliable pass catcher. He's the most important job of a wide receiver is to actually catch the ball. Look at what happened with Amari Cooper this year. You know, he went from a Hall of Famer in the making to, you know, what's wrong with this guy? He couldn't catch a football. So if you can't catch the ball, you can quickly lose value in the NFL. But Ridley, at least at this point in his career, he's a reliable catcher of the football. He's a really good route runner. And when you look at the Bears at eight, this pick, the number eight pick, is going to be all about Mitchell Trubisky. You have to invest in Mitchell Trubisky, whether that means they take an offensive tackle because they probably will have the pick of the litter there, even if they decided to go with Quentin Nelson, who you have going at the next pick to the 49ers at nine. But even if they have Quentin Nelson as an interior offensive lineman who they think is an upgrade over maybe a guy like Josh Sitton, who's now 31 years old, entering the last year of his contract. And, we saw it a couple years ago when they drafted Cody Whitehair in the second round. They ended up cutting Matt Slauson just a couple days later. So that's not out of the realm of possibility. But the bottom line is, whether it's offensive line or wide receiver, I think the pick is going to be all about Trubisky. And if it is going to be a receiver, the only guy right now that's worthy of consideration at this portion of the draft is Calvin Ridley. So as a Bears guy, I know that the Bears fan base would be a little concerned with the pick because we're still getting over the open wound of Kevin White after going number seven, almost the same exact draft spot in 2015, and he's secured he's played four games in his pro career. So I think Bears fans are a little trigger shy at going receiver again.
I think
it's a
Bears
different
fans
era
are
now.
Probably still trigger shy about David Terrell.
That's a very good point. So we don't have a very good history of receivers in the first round. The last good one was probably Curtis Conway. But I do think Calvin Ridley is a different breed of cat than even Kevin White. Excuse me. Kevin White came out of West Virginia, and the big concerns around his game was, you know, is he a guy that can run NFL routes? And I think what we've seen in the very limited action that he's been on the field is that concern was justified. And this preseason, and even in the limited reps he had against the Atlanta Falcons in week one, I was really concerned about this guy as a route runner. I mean, he could not create any separation from defensive backs. He looked lost. Calvin Ridley, on the other hand, is a schooled tactician as a route runner, and it's going to be a different type of transition for him into the NFL. So I could talk about the Bears for the next hour if you want, Luke, so I'll basically cut it off here. But no, I think Calvin Ridley is a very realistic target for them in the first round. But a lot is going to depend on free agency because there's several very good free agent wide receivers that Ryan Pace might go after two of them and then minimize the need for a receiver and push it back into maybe a day two need for the Bears come draft weekend.
You talked about the Jaguars earlier and what a difference Leonard Fournette made as a rookie there. I'm going to fast forward down the first round in my mock draft here to my favorite pick in this first round, which comes at number 29 where the Jacksonville Jaguars sit. And, you and I talked at length in the last episode about why Lamar Jackson deserves to be in the conversation as, one of the top quarterbacks, if not the top overall pick in this draft. But I think if draft weekend comes and he's not in that conversation and he does slide down the board towards the end of the first round, I mean, dear God, can you imagine a backfield with Lamar Jackson and Leonard Fournette on a team with a defense like that team has in Jacksonville? I mean, good God, how much fun would that be to watch?
And, a lot of a quarterback's success in the pros is based on the situation that he ends up in. And if Lamar Jackson ends up with the Jacksonville Jaguars, that would be special. Because the biggest thing for any quarterback who may have some growth that's needed as a passer, which, again, I'm not necessarily as concerned with Lamar Jackson as a pure passer as some may be, but let's assume that the majority opinion is accurate and he needs to develop more before a team can really place maybe a top five value on him. Well, the best way to take some pressure off of a young quarterback is to have a beast of a running back that you can feed 25 times a game, open up the play action game, give Lamar Jackson so much time in the pocket to just make things happen because there's eight guys in the box trying to stop Leonard Fournette. And then if Lamar Jackson starts making plays with his legs or can start pushing the ball downfield a little bit, defensive coordinators are literally going to have nightmares trying to figure out who to key on, Lamar Jackson, Leonard Fournette. What's going to be the way to stop the Jacksonville Jaguars? If you take Leonard Fournette out of the game, it doesn't mean you're stopping the rushing attack in Jacksonville because Lamar Jackson could put up 150 on you. So that would be a special outcome for the Jaguars, especially coming off of a miraculous year that they're having. It looks like they finally got things figured out down there. They've built a championship caliber defense. They have a championship caliber running game. And if you add Lamar Jackson to that, Blake Bortles, he's up and down for as many good throws as he has. He has just as many bad. He's on shaky ground out there. Lamar Jackson would come into a perfect situation. Let Blake Bortles have a couple of weeks next year, again, as a starting quarterback. The minute he starts having his classic Blake Bortles moments, in trots Lamar Jackson, and you could end up seeing something like we saw in Houston when Deshaun Watson finally took over as the starter, and that offense just went to a whole nother level. That's the kind of impact Lamar Jackson would have in Jacksonville.
I couldn't agree more. I think it'd be a really fun fit for him, and honestly, with Blake Bortles, having that extra year option, it's not even a situation where he would have to play right away necessarily. You'd still get an extra year of Bortles to kind of maybe see if he can wait behind him and develop on the bench for a year before ending up in a situation where he has to start.
And you know what? Bortles is almost like he's like the quarterback equivalent of a kicker at this point. He's only as good as his last throw, it seems like, just like a kicker who might be on the verge of losing his job. It's basically kick to kick for job security with that position. Bortles feels like he's kind of in that territory now. So let's say he has an absolute clunker against the Patriots and is pinned with the responsibility or the culpability for the loss. And maybe it just wasn't even close, or the defense kept the team in the game, but because Blake Bortles had some moments of just incompetence at quarterback, you're going to see the calls for a pick like Lamar Jackson get louder and louder if he's on the board at 29. And then going into next season, you could probably see a preseason training camp battle for starting quarterback. The flip side is also true, though, Luke. If Blake Bortles somehow, some way, beats Tom Brady, there's no more quarterback controversy in Jacksonville. You're going to take the good with the bad of Blake Bortles. You're not going to move on from a guy like that who, if he is a key variable in a win, he's, like I said, he's throw to throw at this point, but he could solidify his future in Jacksonville with a special performance on Sunday. I don't think the odds are in his favor, but this is a really interesting mock scenario that you've outlined, because we still don't know exactly what's going to happen with Blake Bortles moving forward.
Last thing I want to ask you about the mock draft. Obviously, it does go four rounds. Who is the one player that I have outside the first round in this projection that you feel like, when all is said and done, absolutely comes off the board in the first round on draft weekend?
So I don't want to use the word absolutely, because that becomes a dangerous
You
declarative
see how I tried
statement.
to trap you there? That was intentional.
Yeah, you try. Yeah, but, you know, like I told you before, I went to law school, man. I know how to bob and weave out of these, you know, declarative statements. But I would say, if I was going to make my best guess as to who has the talent and the upside that warrants a first-round pick, it's Florida State wide receiver Auden Tate. He's a guy that, when I watched his film, I studied him closely over the last week or so. I just saw flashbacks to Terrell Owens, and I'm surprised, to be quite honest, that he has not garnered more attention in draft Twitter as a player that is right up there with the Courtland Suttons and even Calvin Ridleys in this class. I know that might seem crazy, because the production isn't necessarily there, but, you know, a receiver is the one position on the football field that is almost completely dependent on another position to have production. And he didn't necessarily have the kind of consistent quarterback play that would have allowed his natural ability to put up the stats that he's capable of accumulating. But from a pure physical and talent standpoint, Tate is a guy that I think, when it's all said and done, when we look back at this draft 3 years from now, could end up being the best receiver in this class. I know a lot of people like the route running and short area quickness of a guy like Anthony Miller, and we talked about Calvin Ridley, and there's a whole fan base for Courtland Sutton. When I look at pure upside and the ability to potentially take over games on the next level in the NFL, I just see Tate being a Terrell Owens type of player. It's going to be interesting to see what he runs at the scouting combine. You know, if he ends up, you know, a low 4.5s, 4.5 flat, if he ends up being a 4.48 guy, forget it. First round pick. That's when I'll say the word absolutely. If he runs in the 4.4s, he's a first rounder. You cannot ignore those traits. Guys like Auden Tate, or Auden Tate, I don't want my Jersey accent to kind of butcher it here, but he's a guy that you don't find these guys growing on trees. You know, I could throw a rock into the draft prospect pool and hit a 5'11" receiver with my eyes closed. You take a guy with his size, his speed, his length. Those guys are hard to find. And when you find one that has his natural ability and upside, you don't pass on him. So I think he's got a chance to really be a draft process riser and potentially a first rounder when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think that he's one of those players that, you know, I keep talking about how deep this receiver class is, and the fact that just because I have Ridley at 8 and then no other receivers in the first round, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's that I think that teams will see the depth of that second tier and be confident that they can wait until day 2 and get value. I've got 7 wide receivers projected in the second round in this draft, and I just think that, you know, no matter what you need, if you want that, you know, undersized, explosive playmaker type guy, and you want an Anthony Miller or a Christian Kirk from Texas A&M, that type of guy, they're there. If you want big play guys who are kind of in the middle, you've got James Washington. You've got guys with size and athleticism, like you said, in Sutton, Tate, even Deion Kane. You've got Dante Pettis, who's a smooth route runner and a return specialist, one of the best in college football history out of Washington. So there really is going to be something for everybody. And I think even in day 3, there's going to be so much value on the board. It's really going to be interesting to see, especially for a team like the Chicago Bears, who could use, depending on how free agency works out, they could use more than one receiver out of this draft if that's what it comes to. So,
But when you get down to kind of separating guys from a cluster of depth, right? Like, when we circle back to the quarterbacks. If you have a Josh Allen, a Baker Mayfield, a Mason Rudolph, a Sam Darnold, a Lamar Jackson, which one of those guys possesses a potentially special trait, or a trait that's hard to find at the position, that warrants them being pushed to the head, the top, the front of the line? When you talk about quarterback, like we discussed last time, Lamar Jackson clearly has that trait that separates him from the rest. At receiver, Tate, to me, has that, you know, you can't coach size. that's something that you either have or you don't have. And when you combine size with explosive downfield ability, size with playmaking ability, that's a combination of traits that you can't coach. You know, a 5'11" guy is not going to grow 3 inches once they get to the NFL. So when you take a lot of these guys that are in that 5'11" to 6'1" range, all right, well, what's separating them? Route running? Well, with a good receiver coach, a good coaching staff in place, you know, some of these guys will get better as route runners. That's something that's coachable. Even hands, catching the football, you can get better at that when you get to the next level. Size, length, the physical ability to dominate cannot be taught, learned, coached. You either are bringing it with you to the NFL or you're not. And that's why a guy like Tate, to me, separates from that cluster of players you just mentioned, because I'll take any one of those guys you mentioned from Anthony Miller, James Washington, Christian Kirk, and give me any one of them. They're kind of interchangeable. I'm not jumping up the draft board for either one of any of them, because I'd be fine with whoever falls to me. But a guy like Tate, that type of player, there's not four or five of him in this draft. There's maybe two. Him and Courtland Sutton are the two guys that have that look about them where they'd be able to physically dominate an NFL corner. And I personally think Tate's more talented than Sutton. So it goes to show that I think he's very much worthy of being in a different discussion from that seven guys you have in the second round. I think Tate is in that tier above those guys.
Well, and you mentioned that, you know, production really wasn't there. It really depends on what kind of production you want. There's a guy that averaged a touchdown every four catches this year, and I don't think it'll hurt him that his last film that he put out there was a 3-touchdown performance in his bowl game.
Yeah, and again, you take those moments, you take those games, you know, you got to look at a complete body of film over a player's collegiate career. I tend to value their most recent season as long as it's healthy. And wasn't, you know, hampered by injury. I like to see what they're bringing on their most recent season of film into the NFL, because you can't assume that 2 years ago that player is going to resurface once they get to the league. What are they right now? And for Tate, you know, he didn't have the quarterback situation that he probably was hoping for with the injury to the starter early in the season. So you have to look for those games where he really was able to maximize the opportunities that came his way, real opportunities, catchable passes, accurate throws. And I think when you look at those opportunities, even if they were limited this season, he was pretty damn dominant. And you just talked about his performance in his final game. I mean, there's just so much to fall in love with there. That I think, again, combine is going to be massive for him. If he cracks the 4.4s, get ready, draft Twitter. Get ready. You're going to start seeing him in the conversation as the best receiver in this draft.
Well, Brian, we've gone up close to an hour again, breaking down Senior Bowl news and what that process is going to bring for some of these players, particularly the small school guys. We got into some more of the top quarterback talk. We got into the mock draft that we just released at the Draft Wire. Tons of things that we could continue to talk about, but we're going to save them for future episodes. I want to thank you for your time. Again, if you're not following Brian, make sure you're doing that. All of his work at the Bears Wire, covering the Bears for the USA Today Sports, NFL Wire Network, just does a great job over there. So if you're a Bears fan, you're not following that work, I don't know what you're doing, honestly. So me, obviously, at the Draft Wire, we got all your draft stuff. We've got a big board that we just updated and expanded to the top 75 players in this draft. We're going to continue to keep that updated. Each player on that board has their own player profile page that you can click on for each of those players. We got up to the minute draft news. We'll be doing the same through Senior Bowl week. We'll have live coverage from there as well. Really everything you need, you go to DraftWire. We're talking about everybody's projections. We're talking about everybody's rankings, you know, where these guys are going. We've got player interviews, really everything you need. We've kind of tried to build it as a one-stop shop for all your draft needs. And, we want this podcast to just be an extension of that. So, Brian, thanks for your time again. Always a pleasure to chat with you. It's not exactly over a Sam Adams at Veets. And you know, to be honest, really, let's be honest, all the cool stuff about being a Mobile and being at the Senior Bowl, I think I will not miss anything about not being there this year more than I will miss the seafood at Wenzel's. But that's just me.
And you know, when you talk about having a Sam Adams or your beer of choice at Veet's, I think while that's a good time, we also know we are going to be, you know, maintaining our health and not leaving Mobile with concerns about you know, what might have been consumed in the beer mug in Veet's. So Mobile
you
is
make
a
a damn
really
good point, my
wonderful
friend.
you know, it's a great experience. If you listeners, if you haven't had the chance to go down to Mobile to experience the Senior Bowl in person, Phil Savage does an amazing job. He's really turned what was kind of a diehard draft fan experience into really a mainstream event, and that's a credit to him and his crew of that committee that puts that game together. The whole city really just becomes Senior Bowl, you know, just overtaken by the Senior Bowl, and it's the NFL world just travels to Mobile, Alabama for those 4 days, and it's a really fun experience. But I will say, I'm looking forward, Luke, to just being in the comfort of my office here at home, talking ball and talking draft with you, and just getting all the live updates from those who have taken the journey and have risked their health to be down in Mobile to give us the live updates.
And you know, I'll leave our listeners with my parting advice for anybody who's going to be in Mobile. The only two things I'll tell you is just if you can avoid the Saucy Q challenge and survive your cab rides, you're good. You're good to go. You'll make it. It'll be a
and
successful
listen,
week.
And this goes out to Kyle Krabs. I don't know if he's going to be listening from NDT Scouting, but you also want to make sure that if you are going to take any, if you're going to take on any kind of man versus food challenges, just make sure that you have identified a bathroom that has enough privacy to allow you to do your business outside the eyes of NFL, high-ranking NFL decision makers. And we'll let Kyle Krabs and Joe Marino on their Draft Dudes podcast to explain what exactly that means. But it was one of the greatest moments in Senior Bowl history that I don't think Kyle or Reggie McKenzie will forget anytime soon.
And now that – I mean – I'm begging, guys, I'm going to make sure they listen to this because I need this to be responded to on the air. I need the story. I need them to tell the listeners to come clean if they haven't already about – I just – it good. Good times, man. Good times. Good times for us. Embarrassing times for Kyle, but, you know, good times for us. The punchline will never die.
I'm going to say this. Kyle, for all the incredible scouting work that he does, and honestly, Kyle is probably the most talented – draft evaluator right now going, for all the incredible work he does, nothing will ever top that one magical moment.
It is that it was his one shining moment.
Exactly. Like I could hear the Final Four CBS music after the Final Four is over, basketball national championship is done, and they do that montage with the One Shining Moment song. I could just like they should have been playing that as Kyle was walking out of the bathroom because it was his one shining moment.
Well, this will be our one shining moment, my friend. Again, good luck to everybody who's going to be in Mobile. We will have live coverage down there. We'll have up-to-the-minute news and everything you need. We'll still be churning out the mock drafts, the rankings, everything that you need to make your NFL draft experience complete. Thanks for listening. If you haven't subscribed already, we're on iTunes. We're on at pretty much every podcast platform. So please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, to the DraftWire podcast. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Again, we want this to be the show that you want it to be. Let us know what you want to hear from us, and we'll be sure to deliver it to you. So subscribe there and give us a rating and a review. Head over to the Bears Wire and see what Brian and his crew are doing over there. No matter what NFL team you follow, we've got a Wire site for you, so make sure you're checking out the entire Wire network. We've got all your news, all your analysis covered every single day across the league. So once again, for Brian Perez with Bears Wire, I'm Luke Easterling, editor of the Draft Wire. This has been another episode of the Draft Wire podcast.